From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. As we record this episode of Naps Chat, the House of Representatives is preparing to leave for its midsummer recess, but the Senate is scheduled to be in session for another week before leaving the Capitol also. H.R. 3076, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2021, has yet to reach the House floor due to the House Ways and Means Committee and the House Energy and Commerce Committee still having the bill under consideration, and the legislative traffic jam resulting from appropriations bills being voted upon the House floor this past week. There is a bit of talk, that the House may return to Washington in August to vote on a soon-to-be-passed Senate infrastructure bill. The House could take up H.R. 3076 during such a session. I'm not holding my breath on that. But remember, a little less than a year ago, Congress returned to Washington in August to vote on a postal bill. Also, next Friday, August 6th, the Postal Board of Governors will be meeting at postal headquarters to discuss, among other issues, postal performance and the financial condition of the United States Postal Service. Let's move on to this week's guest on Naps Chat, Representative Stephen Lynch, who is a longtime Naps friend and ally. He is a postal champion. Representative Lynch is a senior member of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform and past chairman of its subcommittee having jurisdiction over the Postal Service. The congressman presently chairs the Subcommittee on National Security, and he also chairs the House Financial Service Committee Task Force on Financial Technology. The congressman represents a Massachusetts district that includes South Boston. I have known the congressman since he was first elected 20 years ago. Postal issues are literally part of Representative Lynch's DNA. His mom was a postal clerk, and many of his family members are or were employees of the United States Postal Service. Moreover, Representative Lynch has been an attentive legislator on postal issues, as well as, when necessary, a constructive critic of postal hierarchy. Congressman Lynch, welcome to Naps Chat.
Great to be with you, Bob. Thank you for that very kind introduction. I appreciate it. Thank you. And I think you nailed it on, you know, the legislative process here and where we're at right now. I think legislative logjam is probably, you know, a term of art in this respect. You know, we are driving pretty hard to clean up. We passed two of the appropriations bills yesterday, and we have seven on tap today. And as you know, we're struggling with the transportation bill that's going back and forth with the Senate. So it really is the dilemma is that, you know, there are so many must-pass bills that are in the pipeline that we have to deal with those in a significant way. A lot of them are multi-committee. You know, there are multi-committee jurisdiction on a number of those bills, as well as dealing with the Senate, which makes things even more problematic. But I do, you know, just to sort of put a little bit of icing on what you've described, I do think that the postal bill, the postal reform bill, does offer an opportunity for us, the House and the Senate, the Republicans and Democrats, to demonstrate some bipartisanship and some success. And so I think there's a halo around that bill, and that's why I think that there's hope. As you have, you know, you're not holding your breath, but I do think that there's some appeal to the postal reform piece that other bills don't have, and I don't think that's near the controversy that some of these other measures offer, you know. So I hold out great hope. Certainly I'll be pushing to get that included if it is if we do get called back in August, you know, and we want to clean up some things. That's certainly at the top of my agenda.
Yeah, Congressman, unlike last year where the Postal Service's or whatever legislative activity was being considered by the committee, it was somewhat hyper partisan due to the election. This year, right, it seems to be considerably more bipartisan, the actions,
right,
with regard to,
right,
the Postal Service.
I agree.
Yeah, let me...
I,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please.
No, I do know that I saw a clip yesterday that Postmaster General DeJoy's rollout for slowing the delivery of mail was roundly criticized, I think, by the PRC, I'm not sure, but was roundly criticized. And so that gives me some hope that, you know, that trend will not, you know, will not be adopted. I think it would be disastrous for the Postal Service.
Yeah, let me mention, about 2 weeks ago, I had as my guest the Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro, who's leading a federal court action to stop the Postal Service from implementing the new performance standards. But we'll talk about that in a second. I want to talk a little about something a little bit lighter. We spoke about how, as a person who is an extraordinarily strong fan of Ben Franklin, how he thought the first Postmaster General would view the current postal situation. He responded that he thought that Dr. Franklin would not be pleased. So I want to draw your attention to two individuals who, if they were alive today, would be your constituents. One would be a resident of Baintree. The other one was Weymouth in Massachusetts. And I am referring to our second president of the United States, John Adams, and his wife and patriot, Abigail Adams. They were among the nation's most prolific letter writers. And much of their written correspondence is now in the National Archives and has been written about by scholars. How do you think they would view today's postal situation?
Well, I think they would feel greatly threatened by, you know, any proposal to drop performance standards. That's for sure. You know, John Adams held the seat that I now hold in Congress. I think his son, John Quincy, held the same seat as well. I'm well aware of, I've had dinner with David McCulloch, and I was the keynote speaker at the opening of the Hancock Adams Common that Mayor Tom Koch established in Quincy, Massachusetts, which is the city of presidents. It used to be Braintree, but then they broke it off part of it to create the city of Quincy many, many years ago. But, you know, in their lifetimes, John Adams spent so much time on the road. If you read the Adams book by David McCulloch, and I suggest anybody who's interested in that period, go right ahead. A wonderful, wonderful book. It won the Pulitzer. But he talks about John Adams leaving Braintree, leaving Abigail, and he did not see his son. Now, John Quincy was 4 years old, I think, at the time. And he did not see him again until he was like 17 years old. So this correspondence between them was keenly important. Abigail, there's some wonderful, wonderful letters there between John and Abigail, but there's also a wonderful letter series between Jefferson and Abigail Adams. She was you know, very articulate and well-educated. As some people know, she actually vaccinated her own kids against smallpox by herself, you know, just, and that's when it wasn't popularly accepted, God knows, and in the 1700s. So, you know, she's really a very progressive woman and quite independent and remarkable for any age, but especially the age in which she lived. So, yeah, I think that while we do not today rely upon the, you know, the written word as much as we should, and I think Twitter and texting and, you know, limiting yourself to, you know, a small number of characters has you know, taken the artistry out of our expressions and our writing habits. I think there's still a very, very important role for a timely postal delivery system to serve in our society. So for all those reasons, we have to protect it.
Let's stick with colonial America for one more moment. And John and Abigail Adams, as well as other residents of the colonies at that time, relied on what was known as the King's Highway, which was envisioned by King Charles II of England and completed in 1735. It stretched from Boston to Charleston, primarily carrying correspondence and news. In the 1700s and well into the mid-1800s, mail was primarily transported via horseback or carriage. Fast forward 250 years, and you, as a senior member of the Oversight and Reform Committee, you're advocating for the modernization of the postal fleet to deliver mail. In fact, H.R. 3077, the Postal Improvement Act, includes a provision you crafted relating to such modernization of the postal fleet. Now, we're not talking about modernizing from horses and carriages to some other means of transport. We're talking about 21st century modernization. Can you talk about that modernization and your provision in 3077?
Sure, absolutely. Happy to talk about that. So I introduced a provision both in the Oversight Committee, where I serve, and also I'm now serving in the Transportation Committee. So when we did the transportation bill, I had a standalone bill to actually provide zero emission vehicles for the United States Postal Service. As you know, Bob, the Postal Service has about 237,000 vehicles, many of them older, diesel-burning, vehicles, big trucks that aren't very good for the environment or the communities in which they serve. So my idea was to give the Postal Service till 2030 an opportunity or a mandate, really, to convert all of their vehicles to zero emission vehicles, electric vehicles, and would prohibit them from purchasing any more combustion engine vehicles, you know, beyond that point. So the idea, and also there were other provisions that would provide money for the charging stations at the postal, at the post offices, so that we would have the ability to charge these vehicles. But also in some rural communities, some smaller communities, it would also offer, because the postal vehicles are charged overnight, it would also give an opportunity for the public also to use those stations. But that would be up to the postmaster and the postal supervisor based on the particular, situation of that individual post office. So the idea was to convert all those vehicles. So much of our costs right now within the Postal Service is on the vehicle fleet. We're about to make another huge purchase, and fuel itself. So all of that, could be helped greatly by conversion to electric vehicles. And we have, all across I think of Brockton, Massachusetts, in my district, where they have a very high rate of asthma. They've been hit hard. It's a majority African-American community. And we've been hit hard there with COVID, and they've got, some serious health problems with asthma in that demographic in Brockton. So I think of how enormously helpful it would be to convert all those postal vehicles there in the city of Brockton to zero emission. I'd like to do the same with the bus system there as well. I have a separate piece that would, it's called the Zero Green Buses for Every City bill, which was adopted in the transportation bill, that would provide billions of dollars for doing exactly that in a lot of our cities that have high asthma and respiratory disease rates.
When you think of it, Congressman, horseback was kind of zero emission green delivery also. It just took a little bit too long to deliver. Let's talk about the two postal bills that the Committee on Oversight and Reform approved. One was approved by a bipartisan vote, the other by party line recorded vote. Why was it necessary to have two bills, H.R. 3076 and 3077?
Well, obviously, we felt that just logistically, we did not want the perfect to be the enemy of the good. And we're trying to whatever degree possible to make everything bipartisan, right? I think what did help us with the postal reform piece is that we had the support of the Postmaster General. Rightly or wrongly, it gave a lot of cover to Republican members who wanted to support that bill, because he's a, obviously a Trump appointee. So they felt that it gave them liberty to support the bill, regardless of the merits. Politically, it was not damaging to them. So I don't profess to have a sense of how they strategize on individual legislation, but I do know that on every matter, we would prefer to do it bipartisan, but we just decided we need to go forward with these bills, and by hook or by crook, we've got to get them to the floor. So that was sort of the approach there.
Do you believe that both bills will make it to the floor?
I do. I think the limitation is time, and the log jam that you mentioned at the outset. So I certainly think anything that is bipartisan has a great, that comes out of committee, has a sort of halo around it. And so one would hope that at least that bill would be entertained on the floor. But, you know, there's also the amendment process where we might be able to address some of the reservations that our colleagues on the other side had that, I guess, prevented them from signing on and supporting the bill.
That you're referring to 3077, correct?
Right.
Okay, because they actually complement each other. In fact, I think in an article I referred to 3076 as the heart of the Postal Service and 3077 as the soul of it, because it deals with performance, fleet modernization, investment in infrastructure, which was not really in 3076. So they work in tandem with each other, but the Republicans have thus far failed to circle the wagons around 3077 as they have around 3076.
Right.
And the timing we talked a little bit about, and that was possibly mid-August if the House comes back. You're in session 2 weeks in September, I believe. And there'll be a logjam in September also, because all these appropriations bills that are moving through the House right now, you're running against the end of the fiscal year at the end of September. So there's going to be a lot of activity in September also.
Right. And that's a short month, too, because of the Jewish holidays in September. So we've got a limited window there as well. So you're right. Some of the stuff we're kicking over right now to September will have to be dealt with then. So and the clock is ticking. So we've got to be prompt. You know, in a way that helps. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because the limited amount of time gives us a limited opportunity, but it does put a premium on those bills that have bipartisan support. So that could benefit us.
Let's move down to downtown D.C. from Capitol Hill, and that's the Postal Regulatory Commission. And they recently issued an advisory opinion on the Postal Service's initiative to slow down the mail and alter Americans' expectations relating to timely delivery. And some of the commissioners, to different degrees, concluded that the change was not ready for prime time. What are your views about the change the Postal Service is proposing?
I tend to agree. I think those changes have been driven by, cost considerations that are exacerbated, I think, by some other USPS policies. And so I think it's unfair to and unwise to look to save money by not delivering the mail, basically. You know, that's not a good business model for the post office. And that's what they're doing, yielding market share to their competition. I think it's, there are better ways to make the Postal Service more competitive. Remember, this is, it's sort of a parallel to what they were considering, I would say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Remember, they wanted to go to 5-day delivery. Mm-hmm. They were pushing against the trend. Package delivery was up. The consumer wanted 7-day delivery. They had 6, but the consumer's practices and needs were for 7-day delivery. And my Republican colleagues were pushing for 5-day, and we had a war over that. And we won. We won because at the end of the day, they saw that, the business model required at least 6-day, if not 7-day. So they gave up. They surrendered. And we don't fight that fight anymore. So I see this attempt to go in the opposite direction, you know, deliver the mail more slowly or not at all, as being counter to what consumers and the American taxpayer want. They, you know, they want real time. Look at everything else. They want real time, same day, you know, as quick as I can get it, delivery. And those companies, you know, look at Uber, look at Amazon, look at the companies that are succeeding in the country and what they offer. You know, this policy would be going in the opposite direction to what we see as a most successful model, not only in this country, but it's successful in other countries as well.
Mm-hmm. And the PRC in its decision referenced that they could not validate the Postal Service's cost savings, and any cost savings they did identify were not really that significant from moving
right.
to slow the mail.
Right. And they discounted the loss in revenue that change would bring on.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Kubiyanda, who filed additional views in that advisory opinion, he used to be a staff member for the committee on
right.
oversight and reform when you were chair of its subcommittee on
right.
regarding the Postal Service. And he raised the prospect in his opinion that Congress may want to consider providing the Postal Regulatory Commission with sharper teeth when considering national operational changes of the Postal Service. What would you think of providing the PRC with a more decisive role in nationwide operational changes?
Well, I think that's a double-edged sword. You know, I wouldn't mind giving them more teeth as long as I was assured they weren't going to bite me. You know, and sometimes we get in situations where folks are not acting, I think, in the best interest of the Postal Service or its employees. So I would have to give that a lot of thought. I think it's an interesting proposal, but I'd want to drill down and see how that works in practice. You know, I understand the frustration that generates that type of thinking, and it's one proposed solution. But honestly, you know, I would want to give that a good long lawyerly read in terms of what that proposal might envision. I'm sorry, but you know, I just have to think about that for a bit.
It harkens back to a proposal I think floated by former chairman of the committee Jason Chaffetz to make the PRC the leadership of the United States Postal Service, eliminate the Board of Governors, and make the PRC the governing body of the Postal Service. I remember you proposed that. Let me ask you this: at the top of the podcast, I referenced your postal DNA. Your mom was a postal employee, was a clerk. You have relatives who've worked in the Postal Service. To what extent does your postal DNA and family affinity to the Postal Service inform your judgment about the institution and its actions?
Well, you're right. My mom had, she had 6 or 7 sisters and several brothers. So big Irish family, the Havilands. So my mother and her sister Kay and her sister Sis, Julia, all worked in the Postal Service. My mom was a welder during World War II, so I became a welder later on through the ironworkers, but I wasn't following my father, who was an ironworker. I was following my mother, who was a welder. Kay's daughter, Pat, was also a clerk. Pat's son, my cousin, Joe, was the business manager for all the letter carriers. My brother-in-law, Kevin, is a retired letter carrier. My sister, Karen, and my sister, Linda, are both retired postal clerks. My cousin, Danny, my cousin, Marie, my cousin, Michael, all Morris's, they are also, Michael's still working, but Marie and Danny are retired from the Postal Service. So we've got dozens of cousins and family. So, you know, my first dog, when I was like 4 years old, my mother brought home a puppy that they found on the loading dock at the Postal Service, at the South Postal Annex. And they named him Zip Code. And that was my first, dog. So, you know, I'm all in for the Postal Service. You know what I mean? You know, that's, That's how I was raised. I've been on a lot of picket lines, even as a kid, you know, at different events for my mother and my sisters. You know, I remember, so my mother used to have to remember back in the day, they had to memorize the schemes of all the streets.
Yeah.
And we used flashcards, you know.
I did too. My dad was a clerk, and I learned French on the back of scheming cards.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Yeah. So my mother was really brilliant. She graduated from high school when she was 15. She had two double promotions, but then, you know, any dreams of college kind of went by the wayside when World War II started, and she went to work as a welder instead of going to college. But she was brilliant. I mean, she had those things memorized left and right. And it was just unbelievable how she just grasped them. And it, myself and my sisters, I have five sisters, and we would, you know, drill her and would sit at the kitchen table and would test her, you know, because she'd have to do these periodic exams every time the scheme would change, or, you know, she got a new section that she had to handle. But yeah, she was a remarkable woman. But so the Postal Service, you know, let's put it this way. When I came to Congress, my aunts, my sisters, my mother, my cousins said, you need to get on the Oversight Committee, and you need to get on that Postal Subcommittee. And so, you know, I have to go home at the end of the week. So I did what they told me. So that's how I, you know, identified the Postal Service as being a priority for me as a member of Congress.
Wow.
And I'm happy I did that.
Family get-togethers turn into lobbying activities.
I found that I knew way too much about the Postal Service and, you know, the postal medical plans and the healthcare and all that than I ever wanted to, you know.
Wow. Well, Congressman Lynch, I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of Naps Chat, and I only wish you and your family the best wishes for the summer.
You're very kind, Bob. Thank you for all the good work that you do on our behalf. And, you know, I just want your members to know, I want the postal supervisors to know what a wonderful job you do advocating on their behalf, so that it is crystal clear to members of Congress, and not just the members of our committee, what the needs and the priorities of the National Association of Postal Supervisors are. And you do a great job at that. You're very visible. You're very engaging. And, you know, the educational part of your job is not lost on me at all, because you have members that, unlike myself, come in, you know, cold and don't really know much about how the Postal Service works. And so you do a wonderful, wonderful job explaining that and educating members on, like I said, on the needs and priorities of the postal supervisors. So you do a great job, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Congressman. And I want to thank our Naps Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and healthy.
I'm going.